Real stories, reliable information, the latest technology and news. Welcome to the Plastic Surgery Hub podcast, connecting people with practitioners.
Hello, listeners. It's Trish Hammond here again from Transforming Bodies. And today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Dr. Jason Oates, who is a ENT and facial plastic surgeon. He's based in WA. And he was just recently featured on the cover of Sparring Clinic magazine. And I quite often have chats with him. So today we're going to have a great talk about the industry, the aesthetics industry over the last 20 years, where it's come from, where it is, and where it's going. So this will be really exciting. So welcome, Dr. Oates.
Hi, Trish. Good to be speaking with you again.
Yes.
It's been a while.
I really love these regular chats. They keep me in check. So tell us, first of all, big congratulations for your feature, because that was a fantastic article and I just loved it.
You know, it's, I guess, convenient that this is my 20th year in practice, and it was their 20th anniversary as well, so just coincided nicely.
So happy birthday to both of you. Awesome. So tell us, so give us a bit of a background, like how does it start? Like, how did it even kind of start for you, or for the industry in general?
Okay, well, when I was, in fact, even in medical school, I met a facial plastic surgeon. And I just liked his way of approaching things and his sort of idea on relationships with patients. So patients come to me because, you know, they like me, they want something that I do, as opposed to somebody's really sick and they have to come and see me because they're sick. And there was something with that sort of stuck with me. And so I initially trained in ear, nose and throat surgery. And there was a group called the Australasian Academy of Facial Plastic Surgery. And so I joined that, and they did a lot of training. They were very training focused, especially for the up-and-coming surgeons. So I got very interested in that. When I completed my surgical training, I then went overseas for a year, 6 months to the UK and 6 months to the US, just doing facial plastic and cosmetic surgery, and then came back in 1999 and set up as a purely facial plastic surgeon, just doing essentially cosmetic surgery.
Okay, and I guess you've probably seen a lot of changes and a lot of growth and a lot of a different demographic coming through.
So many changes. One of the things that I brought back from the US was the idea of having a multi-provider clinic. So I was doing my training there, and the doctors had their own licensed hospitals, so they could do all their operating in-house. And they had nurses and dermal therapists, and they did all the treatments. They had the lasers, the IPL, they did the injectables, and it was one big clinic. And certainly in Western Australia 20 years ago when I came back, there was nothing really quite like that. And so I sort of brought that idea in. Botox had just been licensed for cosmetic use in Australia.
Wow. What year was that? What year was that?
So that was 1999. In fact, they got their first TGA approval. I think it was in 2001, a couple of years later. But we had it sort of available. We had collagen was just starting it off. The very first hyaluronic acids were being released, and you know, all these new ideas were sort of coming in. So that was all right there at the start, and we were very limited really in what we had and what we did. Sort of collagen has now sort of completely gone. With the fillers, I can remember all we did was the lip border and the nasolabial crease, and that was it. And so now we inject fillers everywhere. In fact, I guess I inject fillers in more places than
you do.
Than most people.
You do.
So that sort of just expanded out of sight. And in fact, I guess that whole idea of minimally invasive, mm-hmm. when I finished my surgical training, it was sort of the surgery was getting or had been getting for a couple of decades from more and more invasive, especially with facelifts that had gone through this evolution over 20, 30 years of starting off just pulling on the skin and then pulling a little bit on the deeper layer that we call the SMAS and then elevating the SMAS up and then becoming a deep plane facelift. And these ideas were gradually sort of filtering out into, you know, the rest of us doing the surgery, and it was getting more and more invasive. In fact, the year that I came back was also the year that the S-lift, the sort of the mini facelift, was first published. And I think that was then also the start of sort of less invasive surgical procedures as well. So we had alternatives to just doing a full facelift. You could do a mini facelift. And then a few years later, the first threads came available, Aptos threads. And the technology that's evolved there has been amazing. I can remember I had one of the very first Aptos threads in my hand in Australia, and we were being shown these amazing new things at a conference that I was at. And I had the thread in my between my thumb and index finger at each hand, and I was pulling it and stretching it. I snapped it in half. I sort of passed it to the next person. By the time it sort of went around the group of us, it sort of came back in about 4 or 5 bits. So that was like the very early days of Aptos threads. And then, of course, they've just developed incredibly and changed. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they're kind of making a bit of – I hadn't realised that they'd been, you know, that they were – that there was even such a thing. And then they've kind of made a bit of a comeback at a Cosmeticon a couple of years ago, and I thought, oh, what is this? So that's when I came across them first off. I didn't even know that they existed, but as I guess goes with any kind of technology.
Yes. So it's sort of always the – sort of the pendulum sort of swinging, and it sort of goes one way and gets more invasive and trying to get bigger and bigger results. And that can be great because some people need bigger results and some people want bigger results. And then there was a big swing the other way into sort of the more minimal sort of treatments and becoming less invasive and having more of that minimized downtime, in and out sort of things. And so the threads came in. But I think then the threads also got into this idea that, you know, maybe they could do more and more. So the technology of the threads, the techniques, the number of threads were sort of increase and increase. And so they got more invasive as well. And the same with the fillers. Sort of we started off so simply, and now we, you know, we plump up cheeks so much more. Define jawlines, augment temples, foreheads. Yeah, there's sort of now virtually no limit to sort of where we're putting fillers and how much we're putting in. Mm-hmm. And that will sort of swing back again. In fact, I think in the last 18 months, certainly there's been a bit of a swing to being more natural looking with fillers and perhaps not having as big lips, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you reckon as well, like, have you noticed that there's more of a sway, and I guess it's because of all the amazing things that can be done these days, but is there more of a sway to non-surgical, or do you think that's just because there's more non-surgical stuff being done?
Yeah, well, that's the other huge area is just the technology. And so being in these mega clinics in the US, and a lot of the real leaders in laser technology and You go in there and they have a dozen of these brand new lasers or things that haven't even been released and would be doing trials on them. And really the holy grail, and it, in some ways it still is the ability to tighten skin without burning the skin off. So with laser resurfacing, I can burn all the skin off of your face off and get incredible tightening and getting rid of wrinkles. But, you know, it's a big process to go through. Certainly not everybody wants to do that. There's a good couple of weeks downtime. You may have a red face that lasts 2, even 3 months, but you get this great result. But what people really want is that great result without having to have all the skin burnt off. And so I can remember seeing, you know, one of these first machines and the surgeon sort of telling me, look, this is the future. This machine is just amazing. It tightens the skin. And of course, it didn't do a great job. And then more and more machines have come through and we've had every kind of laser with every wavelength of light that you could imagine. We've got radio frequency. We've got focus ultrasound, plasma. People just keep on inventing new energy sources, trying to achieve this holy grail of tighten the skin, don't burn the skin. And I think that's why we're seeing a big increase in the non-surgical things.
And, you know, just on that thing about devices and treatments, like how, like, because there's so many out there, like how can, like how do you navigate that space as a, well, not only as a patient, but as a doctor, like how can you be sure that you're getting all the leading edge stuff? Like, you know, you like your toys, I know.
it's the hardest thing because I really wouldn't like to count the amount of money that I've spent on technology. And even more so, I'd hate to think how much money I've spent on technology that I haven't been able to earn the value back on the incredibly expensive machine that I bought. And it's one of these things that, like sort of everything, you don't want to be the last person to take it up, but you probably don't want to be the first person either. And you might get lucky and you might just pick the right machine and have a real winner, but it's easy to spend $250,000 and have a machine that you then just don't like. And who, as soon as the person doing the treatment, and in our case that might be a dermal therapist or a nurse or cosmetic physician or myself, as soon as they've lost confidence in that machine sits in the corner, gathers dust, and every time you see it, it's like passing a kidney stone. It's just painful.
Yes.
And this is getting something that we're getting better and better at, partially because I think we understand the technology and the physiology that it's affecting and how they work. I think most of us, especially those of us who've been in the industry for 20 years, are a lot more cautious about jumping into a machine. Certainly, I've never had a salesman come to me saying, look, I've got this fantastic new machine. You know, it's going to do these wondrous treatments for your patients. No, that's always what they say. They never come in and say, this machine is terrible. It's going to cost you, you know, $250,000. It's going to give you no results. It's going to cause all these complications. It's going to ruin your life.
Oh, no.
I wish they'd come in and say that because then it'd be really easy. And I'd say, okay, well, I'll skip that one. I'll wait till the first salesman comes back. But the things are being patient, trying to find people who you perhaps know and trust who have got it, and we've gotten a lot better at understanding before and after pictures. You know, I still get show and technology all of the time, and they're saying, look at these fantastic before and after pictures, and I can see, well, that photo was taken with the light coming in from the side and this photo was taken from the light coming, you know, front on, and that makes a huge difference. And, you know, if that's the photo that you're going to show me to sell your machine, then I'm not going to buy your machine because, you know, you should be able to show me proper photos that consistent and represent a real change. But it's hard. I think for a lot of things, it's getting the right training and really building an experience and an understanding of your technology, perhaps before you start releasing it on your patients, because I suspect that, you know, most of the technology out there can achieve good results if you just know how to use it really well. And that's one of the big changes that we've seen in the industry. I can remember when we had our first IPL device delivered 20 years ago. It was the third IPL in all of Western Australia. And they dropped it off and, you know, unpacked it from the box and they said, there you go. And
have fun.
Yeah, the guy was walking out the door and he said, oh, and I asked, well, are you going to show us how it works? He said, oh, yeah, sorry about that. Look, reaches around the back, switches the on switch, says, right, there, it's on. See ya. Walked out the door.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, really? Okay. And that was the big worry. And, in fact, that's partly why a lot of the big training courses, like with Niche Education that does so much in IPL and injectables and that sort of thing, that there just wasn't appropriate training for this technology. And that's changed hugely in the industry. And I think that probably has made a big difference into the kind of results that everybody can get and improved the safety that goes along with these technologies.
Well, you know, that makes so much sense. And I think nowadays, like from what I can gather, the reputable device companies have either got in-house trainers or, you know, like you buy a device and it actually comes complete with a training package so that the device company knows that when someone that they've sold a device to has actually bought one, you know, that everyone's been trained in it and trained properly and it's being used the right way and with the right protocols and...
Exactly, and that's really important to the big, reputable, ethical companies, because what they really want is that practitioner sort of out and about telling everybody, I bought this machine and the results I get are fantastic, because that leads to more sales for them. Of course, the other huge thing that I've seen change is that, you know, there was only a handful of suppliers of lasers when I started, and now there's, you know, dozens and dozens of them, and you can get these incredibly cheap machines out of China, and then you know, anybody can virtually get the distributor to some of these machines, and they can sell it to anybody, and then, you know, they're not providing the training. And there hasn't been the laws out there to protect the public, although that is slowly changing, still mm-hmm. very slowly. Mm-hmm. Then they're perhaps taking it to non-medical practitioners and offering them technology, and they don't know enough because they haven't seen this side of the industry, and they don't know that they need more training than perhaps what they're getting. So, yeah, that's been a huge sort of change.
Yeah. And so, because I know that you're involved in, you know, in some societies and associations and academies and all that, that so you must have a little bit of a vision of where it's going in the future. And I know that there's a really big focus on patient safety. Like, oh, I mean, in fact, that's how Plastic Surgery Hub even started, out of a level of, you know, a desire for safety for myself, actually. So, like, things must be changing in respect to that, and I think the consumer is becoming a bit more savvy these days. So where can you see things changing in the coming years? Because, like, I've only been in the industry as a consumer advocate for, like, you know, 6 years, and I've seen the change in that small period of time, which you must have seen, like, you know, 4 or 5 times that. Is there anything that you can give us?
I'll just up with my walking stick here.
Yeah.
So when I started, there was very little in the way of sort of government-type regulations. Mm-hmm. as I said, I set up my own operating facility and hospital. There were no regulations for that in Western Australia when I started. Then the government brought them in, and we became the first licensed twilight sedation facility in WA. But part of the problems with having regulations by government is they sometimes have different agendas than perhaps what we would like. You know, we'd want it just for safety. Mm-hmm. I think they mainly do it to try and take responsibility off of themselves so that they don't get sued, because some of the rules that we have to follow just seem ridiculous and don't seem to be improving outcomes and safety. But certainly we've seen in New South Wales recently some big inquiries and recommendations coming forward as to who can do what surgery, where it can be done, the kind of sedation and hospital requirements. And that's been really good, and I think that's important. And like always, there is certain things in it that seem slightly unusual, such as in New South Wales, labiaplasty needs to be in a registered general anaesthetic type hospital, but it's a procedure that technically is simple to do under local anaesthetic and perhaps doesn't need that. But because of the intimate nature of it, it gets managed differently. So rules themselves all have different ways of being written up and for different purposes. But I certainly think that's been a good thing. As far as on the surgical side, I was the president of the Australasian Academy of Facial Plastic Surgery more than 6 years, in fact, 12 years ago when I first started my presidency. And that organisation is purely devoted towards training surgeons. And because we work in a fairly limited area, it's facelifts, eyelids, rhinoplasty, and pinning ears back. So if you're a member of that society, you get really intensely trained in doing those particular procedures. And hopefully that has led to much better outcomes and much better safety for the patients of those surgeons.
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense, because the more that you hang out or train or whatever with people that do what you do, the better you kind of get at it, because you learn what everyone, you know, what everyone else is doing. And
I can't believe that 20 years down the track, I still go to the conferences. I'm still learning stuff there all the time. You know, I would say 3 or 4 nights a week, downloading and reading articles, because there's so much. I guess that's another change over 20 years. They invented this thing called the internet. You should try it. It's fantastic. and Google. I found this thing called Google, and you can get on there and search. And but certainly for doctors, there's some great access into journals. And that gives you access to, you know, the people who are developing the latest techniques and sharing their experience.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the great things about medicine, is that openness and willing to share. We don't hide, the best option for doing things. We make it sort of freely available. And if you're keen and you want to learn how to do the very best rhinoplasty, the best facelift, all that information is always available. So that's great.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it's where, like, on another end of it as well, I think where a lot of stuff is kind of happening, although I know there's all these rules changing around it as well, is probably on social media, where people are kind of going to social media to kind of check out what everyone's doing, don't you think? Do you think that's like an area that's kind of growing a bit? I know it is for me personally. Like if I find out about a business, I'm straight away on social media checking out what they do there.
Absolutely. So the other huge change that we've seen is in the patients themselves and how they're accessing information. So 20 years ago, I was one of the first facial plastic cosmetic surgeons to have a website, lots of information, developing before and after pictures, and putting it out there so that people could find that information. Mm-hmm. Then there were like some TV shows, the extreme makeovers and the Swan and this sort of thing. And that really opened up the idea of cosmetic surgery to just your everyday sort of people. The idea that, oh, it's not just for like celebrities, movie stars and Hollywood, mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe everybody, anybody could have a nose job or a facelift or something. And then social media took off and everybody's posting photos like crazy. And then all of a sudden they're not liking the way that they look in photos, or heaven forbid, somebody makes a comment about them in a photo. And that's, you know, one of the amazing things that people are willing to say all kinds of things online that they wouldn't necessarily say face to face.
So true.
and social media then with the Instagrams and Snapchat and the filters. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you know, everybody can look like a movie star in their social media posts.
Yeah.
And then that's really is starting to cause this problem of people expecting to look like their social media filter.
Yeah.
And I used to think that the vast majority of my patients had very realistic expectations and, you know, desires. You know, when somebody came in and wanted a rhinoplasty and changed the shape of their nose, it was because they had a nose that sort of warranted having a change. And now people do tend to come in with perhaps more subtle desires or wanting something that's sort of from a social media filter, which isn't going to be impossible to achieve.
Yep, yep. I totally hear you because, I come across that all the time. And I think generally as a society we're becoming more critical. Well, actually, I don't know if it's becoming more critical or we're caring more, or the fact that we know that there's more out there to make us look better, which can make us feel better, which we believe can make us be happier. Like it's a whole big, like it's not just one thing. It's a combination of a bunch of different things.
Yeah, it always is. And I'm sure it'll be a pendulum swing again, and I think it's already starting swing against. It was photoshopping of models in magazines and magazine covers. I didn't photoshop my photo on the cover of that magazine. I should have asked for that.
You looked all right to me, but no, I'm not critical of, we're always critical of ourselves.
Well, exactly. The number of times I say that every day, mm-hmm. nobody else notices what you notice. Only person who's critical of how you look is you.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that makes it doesn't stop people from wanting to have cosmetic surgery. I think maybe we'll get to the time when people will all be switching off their filters. People will stop posting so much on social media. And yes, we'll swing back to more normal society.
Do you think? I don't know if I I don't know if I think the opposite.
There's nothing more difficult than predicting the future.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, look, that's been so, so interesting. And, I always really enjoy talking to you because I always get a little bit more of an insight because as we had a chat before, I'm not from the aesthetics industry traditionally. I kind of fell into it from, a love of wanting to look and feel better about myself. So I think there's probably a lot of people out there that quote, fall into it in that same way. And once you're in, you're in.
Absolutely.
Once you're in, you're never happy with how you look. You're always going to want to look better.
I have 70-year-old women come in, you know, wanting to have a facelift and say, well, you know, that'll, you know, last me for 10 years and then I won't care anymore. And I say, oh, I can guarantee when you're 80, you're going to care how you look.
Oh, bless. Yeah. Well, I was talking to a doctor last week and she, her oldest patient that came in for injectables, she does non-surgical, she's a cosmetic physician, was in her 90s.
Yeah.
Amazing. Absolutely. I just like, whoa, I want to meet those people because I, like, I can't tell. So I just want to meet those people. Think, really? Tell me your story.
Oh. Yeah, well, she was probably the 60-year-old woman who you thought was sitting next to you.
You're probably actually right. Spot on. Oh, look, thank you so much. So I love that you're keeping us always looking good and feeling good about ourselves.
You're welcome, Trish.
Thanks so much, Dr. Oates. And listeners, look, if you're out there and you're in WA, if you want to go and see Dr. Oates, he's easy to find. You can just Google him. It's Dr. Jason Oates with a Y. So J-A-Y-S-O-N and O-A-T-E-S. And he's from Academy Face Body in Subiaco. So thank you so much, Dr. Oates.
Thanks, Trish. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
The material provided in this podcast is general information and does not constitute medical advice, nor is it a substitute for consultation and advice from your own practitioner. It should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical illness. Any medical or surgical decision should be made in consultation with your own doctor or practitioner and not based on the materials provided in this podcast.